I understand fully myself, because I was very much in that place where for the first 7 years that I sold real estate, I could not afford to purchase a home of my own, right? I was a self-employed person. So for those of you out there who are jealous or envious or getting angry or upset watching your friends and your family and everyone else move on and obtain those homes and get those houses for themselves, I understand how you feel. Hey everyone, welcome to the very first episode of the Home Goals Podcast, the ultimate guide for turning your home goals into a reality. I'm your host, Derek Thornton. Join us as we navigate the twists and turns of obtaining a home. We'll be offering expert tips, helping you avoid pitfalls, and championing your journey towards that cherished place to call home. Join us, sit back, relax. We'll take a little time to go into everything. I personally have been a realtor for about 10 years now, going on 10 years. I've been married for going on 11 years. We have three beautiful children. And I have lived in the Raleigh, North Carolina area since 1996. So well before we were having all of the top 10 lists or showing up on all those lists, I've lived out here. This is the place that I've called home. I went to NC State, right? I've been here for years and years, and I love this area. And I've just seen the tremendous growth that has exploded over the years, and it's just been wild to see. And one of the reasons that I wanted to sit down and even do this podcast or put this all together was one thing that I'd started to notice recently, especially over the last few years, as we have seen house prices skyrocket at an crazy rate. One thing I was constantly starting to hear from people who are in the millennial generation as myself or even younger was that it was just a lot of hopelessness in the area. I was continuing to hear people talk about, you know, I'll never get a home. I shouldn't even entertain the thought of getting to that point because it's just never going to happen for me. It hurt me to hear people talk like that, because obviously I believe that having a place to call home is something that everyone deserves. And more importantly, if you can own that home that you're in, that is one of the best things that can happen for a lot of people. Home ownership isn't necessarily for everyone, and I understand that, but for a great deal of people, that is one of the best ways for them to really become locked in their community, and really it helps benefit so many other areas and so many other businesses, right? The restaurants, the grocery stores, the local shops, the schools, the libraries, all those things are impacted by our local homeowners. And so I think it's a huge benefit for people to be able to reach that goal, and I really wanted to figure out a way to try to help that, right? It's very easy for us to sit around and, you know, complain and say, woe is me, what's going on and stuff, but I wanted to figure out, like, okay, how can we come up with solutions to help with that? And so part of this podcast is going to be going into that, but before we even delve into just figuring out ways to climb out of this housing affordability crisis that we've been dealing with, I wanted to first just address the problem, right? You can't make a change or expect to get any better if we can't even address what the actual problem is. And there are a lot of people out there who kind of dismiss many of the complaints that people will put out there about housing affordability in the area. And so I wanted to let you know, if you are someone who is trying to obtain a home or trying to purchase a home and you are feeling just like hopeless and you're feeling like you can't get there, I want to first acknowledge that yes, you are right. There is a massive problem and there is a massive disparity in this industry, especially in certain markets like in ours, in the Raleigh and the Triangle market as well in North Carolina. So I wanted to look up some numbers just to kind of give a snapshot of where we were in where we stand today. And I figured, based on the recent success, like I said, I am an NC State alum, so I figured based on the recent success of the Wolfpack this past year, they made it way farther than any of us ever expected, and we were rooting them on the whole way. But I wanted to take things all the way back to 1983, that blessed year when we had the miracle run and won the NCAA championship. Awesome time. And I wanted to take things back to give a snapshot of what the housing market was looking like, what the average income was looking like, and compare it to where we are today. So these are just some random numbers that I pulled, some of them from Yahoo Finance, some from the U.S. Census Bureau. We're really just trying to give you just a general idea, so don't take these as the gospel. It's just some general stats that I found. But in 1983, the median house price was $75,300, right? So $75,000, the price basically of what you would pay for a Chevy Tahoe in today's world, that is what a house used to cost in 1983. The median income in 1983, $24,580, so just under $25,000. So the difference between those two, basically a house, a median house was three times the median household income. The interest rate, the average interest rate during that year was about 13.2. So I pray we never see that again. But just to give you an idea of where things stood. So although they had a much better discrepancy in the price of a house versus the income that was coming in for the household, the interest rates were still sky high and put them in a pretty tight bind as well. Not nearly as bad as what we're in right now, but still a tough situation that they were in. You fast forward to present day, the median home price 2023, $417,700, right? So that's the median home price in the US. Median income, $77,000. So instead of being about three times more, the house being three times more than the median income, now you're looking at close to 5.5 times, right? And so it's a drastic increase. If the home prices had paced right along the median household income, you'd be looking at a median home price of about $231,000, right? So if it was three times what the median household income is nowadays, $231,000 is a house. And I don't know where you are in the country or where you are in the world, but if you were to go into our MLS and look up houses and say that your max price range, max price point was $230,000, if you're in the triangle, you're gonna likely be getting a fixer-upper, or you're gonna see something show up, zero results. There's gonna be hardly anything showing up for you in that price point that gives you option. Now, 4 or 5 years ago, $230,000 would have got you a nice single family home. Like, you could have done something with that in our area. Now that is non-existent, or it's going to be a major fixer-upper, or you're going to be living out in a further area from the heart of the triangle. The average interest rate last year, 2023, was about 7%. Which is significantly higher than what we experienced a few years ago, but still not quite as bad as 40 years ago. But the numbers have changed so drastically. Usually, the general rule of thumb when you're looking at what your monthly mortgage payment is going to be over the course of 30 or 15 years, one of the numbers that they want you to, or that they recommend often for you to keep it within, is about 30%, right? They say your average monthly mortgage payment should be about 30% of whatever your monthly take-home pay or your monthly income is. Once it starts to creep past that 30% mark, you start to bleed over into the territory of becoming what we call house poor. Right? House poor is essentially when your mortgage payment is so high that you have this house that you enjoy and you love living there and everything. You have shelter over your head. You have a roof over your head, but you really can't afford to do anything else, right? You're eating ramen noodles every night. You can't go out to the movies. You can't go out with your friends. You can barely afford to pay the utilities and everything else going on in the world after that point, right? If the median income had paced with the median house price that was in 1983, you would be looking at a monthly mortgage payment of about 30% of the median income. But the way things stand right now, if you're looking at the median income compared to the median house price in today's world, you're looking at like almost 52%, right? So 50%, so if you take in, let's say, $6,000 a month, half of that, if you had a median priced house, half of that would be going towards just the mortgage payment. Not water, not electricity, not gas, not groceries. None of that will be included. Just the house alone would be 50% of your income in today's median numbers or the average numbers for most households in that price point. And that just simply is not sustainable. And we've got such a low amount of inventory, housing inventory in the country. It's really keeping the prices from coming down. There's a lot of people out there who are hoping and praying for the day where the house prices will do something similar to what they did in 08 during the Great Recession, right? Where there's going to be this massive drop in all the prices and everything's going to bounce back and we're going to be able to get people back into houses at an affordable rate. That just isn't on the horizon in the current world that we stand in today. The inventory is just too low for that to be a possibility in this current market that we're in right now. And so, unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, we have to figure out ways to get around it. But I did want to make sure I went over those numbers to just explain to you guys, like, hey, I acknowledge the fact. I know there's a lot of people out there who tell you stop complaining, or you guys don't have it that bad, or it's not that difficult for you. Oh, it is that difficult. And I can tell you, as a part of the millennial generation myself, the generations who came before us, they experienced their own difficulties, they experienced their own different things. Comparing that to what we're experiencing is an apples to oranges comparison, right? There was a lot of things that they experienced with the market. They went through recessions as well. Every recession is different in the way that it impacts people, but to say that, oh, you know exactly what it feels like to try to buy a house in today's market because you bought one 40 years ago, that just simply isn't the case. And that's one thing that we have to acknowledge. I mean, if you even look at college tuition, right? I'm still paying student loans myself. You look at the average price of tuition, room and board in 1983. When State won that championship, Go Pack, $3,800, right? That was like the average tuition for room and board to go to college. About 15% of the median household income. That was the cost for someone to go to college. Fast forward to present day, it's just under $28,000 for a 4-year college. And mind you, 38% of those people don't even graduate who go. But again, just under 28,000 for the average 4-year college tuition. And so now that jumps all the way up to like 36% of the median household income in present day. And so that leads to a lot of people taking on debt, taking out student loans. When you take out student loans, when you take out loans for a car, any type of loans or debt that you build up, it is impacting your ability to be able to purchase a home, right? The lender, if you're getting a mortgage loan, that lender is going to say, hey, you can only have so many debt payments that you're paying each month. We call it debt to income ratio. They're going to look at your car, they're going to look at your credit card, they're going to look at all the debts that you're paying, and they're going to total up all of those debts and say, hey, if it's over X amount, right? If it's 60, 70% of your income every month is going to be going towards debt payments, right? Your mortgage, towards your car, towards your student loans. We're not going to give you this loan because we think you're going to end up defaulting, which you probably will if that's the case. And so all of those debt payments that you take on, they have a consequence that is lasting. And so you have to be very careful of that and aware of that. And there's a lot of people out there who there have student loans and car loans and other debts that they're working on. And those things are hindering them from being able to purchase a house because they just can't get the numbers to match up. So that's one thing that we want to keep in mind is that, like, hey, we understand that a very real problem that you guys are experiencing or dealing with is just the unaffordability of just life in general. I saw jokes the other day, you know, every time you step outside, it feels like you're spending $100 or something. So that's one of the big problems that we're dealing with. Anytime there is a crisis, right, whether it's a housing affordability crisis or inflation, whatever there is a crisis that's going on, our immediate gut reaction or our instinct is to find someone to blame. Right? And so when it comes to housing affordability, people are looking, okay, who can we blame? That we blame politicians, we blame realtor commissions, right? That's a hot topic right now. We will blame other generations. We will blame any number of people. And one thing that we often neglect to do is we often neglect as homeowners, we forget to look in the mirror and also realize that we have a culpability as well into the current housing affordability crisis. I tell people all the time, I know plenty of people who are in favor of finding affordable housing for those out there. I know plenty of people who are champions for housing affordability, who think it's a great idea for us to try to find some affordable units or to make housing more affordable for our teachers, for our first responders, for all these people out there who are struggling to get their home. I know plenty of people who are supporting any ideas like that until their home is involved. Right, I know plenty of people who are all in favor of finding affordable housing until it is their home that is impacted. One of the first examples of that is what we call the NIMBYs, the not in my backyard. Right, we'll make plans to build affordable housing units, and everyone's in favor, like, oh, this is a great idea, this is awesome, until the vote comes up for where they're going to place those affordable housing units. And if it's in someone's backyard or near someone's property, their immediate thought is, I don't want those houses bringing down my home value. So you can build it somewhere else, but not here, not in my backyard. Right? That's their immediate thought. Or you have situations where, and this one is much more common or much more relatable, I should say, in that many people feel as if, hey, I'm in favor of affordable housing. However, if I go to sell my home, I'm not going to sell it at a discount just to make it easier on someone else, right? I want to sell my house for the highest price possible. One of the number one advantages to home ownership is the ability to build and take advantage of home equity, right? It's almost like a built-in savings plan in many cases. And when people sell their home, they're trying to make the maximum profit possible. We live in a capitalistic society. And you could come to someone and say, hey, remember how you talked about creating some affordable housing, right? Well, you're going to make enough on the sale of your house. What do you say we just sell it at a 30% 30% less than market value just to give some other people a chance? Not many people would be willing to take that on. And that's understandable. We all have our own definition of what normal is. Right, so if I have a family with three kids and we have four cars in the driveway, in my mind, that's normal. But if someone else, or if my neighbor has three kids and they have six cars in the driveway, well, now that's too much. Who would ever need six cars, right? That's how many people think. Or if you are willing to spend $100 on a pair of shoes, you think that's normal. If you find out someone else or your neighbor spent $500 on a pair of shoes, well, now that's too, who would ever need to spend that much on a pair of shoes? We always use ourselves as the baseline for what is normal or what is the standard or what is acceptable in many cases, right? And so when you look at a lot of the homeowners out there who are sitting on copious amounts of home equity, many people are saying, well, hey, you're going to make $200,000 off the sale of your home. What's knocking 50 grand off of that? What's knocking 100 grand off of that? That's still a lot of money, right? And it's not the way that people view things, because a lot of people, their house is their greatest asset. It is the place where they have a great deal of their funds locked up. It's their retirement for some people. It shouldn't be. We should have other things that are in place, but that's just not the reality in many cases. And so we have to understand that many people are not going to be willing to reduce those prices. And that is why we as homeowners also play a role in the housing affordability crisis, right? If I was a billionaire and I said, hey, I'm going to build a neighborhood with 1,000 homes and I'm gonna make them all at really affordable prices so that all the different people, the teachers, the first responders, all those people in the area who are trying to purchase their first home, they can do it at an affordable rate. I know I'm gonna take a loss, but I'm a billionaire, I can afford to take that hit, right? Well, let's say I put that project out there. It'll be great. There are a lot of people who will be able to take advantage. But after those first wave of homeowners moved in, what inevitably would end up happening is that people would start to move, right? The average person stays in their home about 5 to 7 years. And so people would start to move out of that house and go to sell. And again, the number one advantage to owning a home, not the only advantage, but the number one advantage to owning a home is being able to build that equity. All right. And so if I was truly trying to help these people for this community, I'm not going to try to stifle or put caps or limits on what type of equity they can build up in the home. Right. So I would have to give them free rein to be able to do what every other homeowner is able to do and sell it for the highest price possible. And so it would be great for all the people who could take advantage in that first wave. But 5, 7, 10 years down the road, we would likely end up in the exact same position all over again. Right. Because those people would start to move out, sell the home for the highest price possible. And now you've got a neighborhood full of unaffordable units because, like I said, we're right back in that same position. And so those are just things we have to keep in mind. And while we should focus on trying to find ways to build affordable units, that can't be the only solution, right? We also have to figure out ways to help increase income. We have to figure out ways to help savings, help all the other areas that help lead to home ownership. We have to help those out as well. And that's what this podcast is really going to be focused on, is finding ways to help you in whatever way possible, right? In 1 week, it might be learning more about certain loan products that are out there. 1 week, it might be learning how to cook on a budget, right? So you're not eating your down payment, essentially, where you're going out to eat all the time. 1 week, we may be talking about ways to increase your income. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things, right? It's not just housing focused. It's all the other areas of your life that impact your ability to be able to attain that home. And that's what we're going to be discussing. I understand fully myself, because I was very much in that place where for the first 7 years that I sold real estate, I could not afford to purchase a home of my own, right? I was a self-employed person. So, right, so we'll do an episode on that where for all my self-employed people out there, we'll talk about what the process is like for you being able to obtain a home. But there was a time for myself as well where I was helping people every single day. I was helping people buy and sell houses, but could not afford to do that myself, right? And so there are very few people who understand as well as I do how it feels to watch other people do things that you wish you could do, right? Or that you wish you could be in a position to do. And so for those of you out there who are jealous or envious or getting angry or upset watching your friends and your family and everyone else move on and obtain those homes and get those houses for themselves, I understand how you feel. I may not have done it as long as you have. I may have done it for longer than you have. But the point is that I fully understand what that feeling is like. And I want to help make sure that you can help get over that hump as well. And so I'm going to dedicate myself completely to making these episodes as helpful as I can. If you ever have questions that you want me to answer or address, feel more than free to email me. I'll put my email down here in the link as well, or in the podcast description, dthorntonrealty@gmail.com. Feel more than free to send me messages or emails, just questions that you might have or that you would like me to address. We can all come together and making sure that your home goals become a reality. So thank you for joining me. We'll be here every week. Every Monday, we'll release a new episode. Have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you next time.